Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskas, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Fiona Barton, and her brand new novel is called Local Gone Missing. It is available everywhere. And Fiona, I have to say that I was a little apprehensive because I got so used to your previous works that I enjoyed so much. I thought, okay, we got a new character here. I hope I'm going to love it. And I ended up loving it. So please introduce us to Elsie King because she's a great character.
Okay. D.I. Elise King is a murder detective, senior murder detective, who finds herself at an absolute crossroads in her life. She's in her 40s, but she's just, the big relationship of her life has just broken up, and she's been diagnosed with breast cancer. And she suddenly finds herself wondering whether she can ever be the woman that she once was. She feels very vulnerable, and she's off sick at home, and she's just moved to a small seaside town. And she's so unsure, but she lives next door to a very feisty, nosy woman called Ronnie, who persuades her that when a local man goes missing, that they should team up, and she... And she starts to investigate and sort of feel her way back into the role that she loved.
This town, this small seaside town, Ebbing, Sussex, I picture it as sort of a Cape Cod. A lot of weekenders and a lot of locals and conflict between them. So when you went about writing a story like this, we've seen you write police procedurals. This is a lot more character-driven than the police procedurals ever can hope to be because you have these conflicts. And so how did you go about getting into the meat of the matter with the conflicts between a lot of people and different personalities in this town?
Well, it was circumstances, really, because my husband and I moved back from France 3 or 4 years ago. Gosh, time just flies. And we now live by the sea. For the first time ever, in a small town. And so everything was fresh. So, you know, I was noticing lots of things and talking to people and sort of immersing myself in the life here. And I saw immediately, I mean, you know, it's all very lovely, you know, people in the sea doing kite surfing and lovely cafes and shops and things. There is a definite undercurrent about the fact that weekenders, people from London and elsewhere, especially during the pandemic, have been buying up little old bungalows and turning them into these sort of clapboard houses with floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the sea. So it's changing the character of the area. And also because they're empty most of the time. You know, they come for a couple of weeks here, a weekend there. But a lot of the time, these beautiful houses are standing empty. And so I noticed that. And it's meat and drink to a writer, really, that sort of conflict where people feel so strongly about things and pressure, tensions build.
One of the characters that stood out to me is the cleaner, who, and I thought of a couple things as I read this. I thought in high school, our custodian in our high school, we used to joke that he knew that we were going to be skipping class before we knew we were going to be skipping class. The custodian knows all. And then over the weekend, I watched the movie Heartburn from the mid-80s, the great Nora Ephron movie, and there's a house cleaner in that movie who seemed to know a lot of secrets about people in Washington because she'd clean houses for everyone. So you really hit onto a trope there that I think has been used, and you used it so effectively in this book. House cleaners know a lot of secrets because people, for some reason, bear their lives in front of them and treat them as invisible, but they're really not, right?
No, that's absolutely it. And she was perfect because I wanted to write about insiders and outsiders in the town. And of course, Dee, the cleaner, is the ultimate insider because she goes from house to house. She sees everything. She sees your post, your mail, what's in your bedside cabinet, what's in your bathroom. She knows, you know, the wine bottles in the bin. She knows so much and says nothing because that's, you know, if cleaners gossip, you know, they get sacked. So, she was perfect for that because she could be everywhere. And as you say, people think they're invisible. You know, they don't take any notice. They know they're there, obviously, because they can hear them hoovering and whatever. But they are a sort of invisible presence in the house. So, I loved writing her.
I'm chatting with Fiona Barton about her brand new novel, Local Gone Missing. And Fiona, I know you come from a journalistic background, and I think you've joked that you, before you started writing novels, you'd never written anything more than 3,000 words. And when you write a news story, when you're a journalist, the whole idea is to get to the heart of the matter and editing. You got to cut down and less is more. When you need to expand the story, the readers of novels are hearing a lot of what journalists hear but don't write about. And so how did you shift your writing focus to put in the stuff that we may not see in the background to show us how you got there rather than just the results that a journalist generally shows?
Well, that's a really good way of putting it. I hadn't thought of it like that, but you're absolutely right. Well, it was a huge shifting of gears, I tell you, because a journalist needs to keep it short, sweet, snappy, and tell the reader the story in the first paragraph, which is not great for a thriller. So I had to learn the drip, drip, drip and let myself do it. After 30 years as a journalist, I found it very hard to be expansive, to let thoughts run, and I was editing myself. So I've had to give myself permission to write long, but I still, you know, my sentences are normally very short. Still, I can never quite lose that, but I have let myself imagine, even when I'm writing about characters, I'm grounding in people I've met or interviewed. I still, you know, I still do that, but I do allow myself, you know, a more of a free rein. But it's taken 4 books, so it's hard to unlearn a lifetime's habits and tics, really.
You know, and you talked about the whole outsider aspect of Elsie King coming in here, but it's funny to listen to how people who are just sort of accepted in their own little community, how an outsider can all of a sudden call BS on some of their stories. And I think you've told a story about a conversation that you had. It was a 10-minute conversation with a stranger that sort of gave you the jumping-off point for the book. Would you share that with us? Because I think it's an excellent story and an excellent example of what you tried to accomplish with the book.
Sure, and it was something and nothing. This is the thing, but it stuck with me. So it was a 10-minute episode, conversation, at an event, and I stood at the bar, and there was a guy talking to a group of people and telling them about all his important friends, and being a journalist, I earwigged all this, but he was talking about connections with important people, including royals. And the thing was, I used to do royal stories, and I knew he was a fake because he was getting it all wrong. And we kind of locked eyes at one point, and I think he realized I was onto him, and so he went off. But what it left me with was the feeling, how do you, if you reinvent yourself like that, what is it like waking up in the morning and having to remind yourself who you are today? You know, who you know, what you know, and keeping things going. And what happens when you lock eyes with somebody at a bar who knows that you are a fake? You know, what effect does that have on you? So I kept that because it fascinated me. You know, people putting on a new skin is something else, isn't it? You can, if you move to a new place, you can do that. You can just reinvent yourself. And I think it was Tolstoy, somebody very grand anyway, who said there were only 2 plots, that's the hero's journey and a stranger comes to town. So I went for the second one.
Do you ever, still a journalist at heart, do you ever sit there and wonder why people do that? Or are you more interested in that it's part of human behavior and we just have to accept it and there may not be any reason other than ego?
Oh, no, it's the why. That's what So, you know, I'm not the sort of writer who goes for the gore, you know, for the crime, the nitty gritty of what people do to each other, the what. I'm all about the who and the why. Having interviewed an awful lot of people, you just want to know. You want to know what makes people tick, what can turn a normal person into a criminal, into a murderer. So I've always been fascinated by that.
Do your answers to the question as to the why, have they changed as you've observed this and written 4 novels now?
I think so. Just because, you know, often you would be listening to evidence in court or something as a journalist, or doing a background interview. But as you said earlier, it is, you know, very much a snapshot, whereas I can spend a year thinking about it. What is it? I'm not sure I get it right, but I do look at why people behave the way they do and look for something beyond the simplistic, you know, he was born bad. You know, and I read a lot of, you know, psychology and that kind of thing to try and get a handle on it, really.
I would think as a journalist you have people that are always trying to give you tips and, you know, ooh, cover this. This would be a good story to cover. Here's something to investigate. Have you experienced that same thing with as a novel writer now, as a novelist, that people are coming up to you saying, oh, this would make a great idea for a book? And how do you handle those situations?
I wish they did. No, people always say, oh, that would make a good book, and exactly the wrong thing. You know, It might make a short story, but it's never going to make a full-blown novel. And, you know, I read papers every day. I listen to news. I sit in cafes and listen to what people are talking about. So I try and get ideas that way. No, nobody's ever given me a spot-on idea for a book. They're probably writing it themselves, aren't they?
When you say that, it'll make a good short story, I think a lot of people use that phrase, oh, I could write a book about my marriage, or I could write a book about my job, and oftentimes it's just not there. And so how do you determine when the story comes to your mind, this is going to make the book, this is a big enough story that I could turn this into a novel?
Wow. I have developed what they call a nose for news. You know, I can hear something and I think, I want to know more. I want to know why that would happen. Who would know about it? Would it be somebody's secret? So it's that kind of sense, I think, that I have of a story. I mean, often the idea is something tiny. For The Child, the second book, I'd read this, and it was just, as I said in the book, just a paragraph, really, about, you know, the body of a newborn child being found buried. But it sparked off lots of what ifs, you know, in my head, and I could see that I could build around that.
Well, the new novel is Local Gone Missing. It's the latest from Fiona Barton. The book is available everywhere, and if you haven't read her previous series, go and check those out, The Widow and The Child, as she mentioned. Fiona, just a fantastic offering. I love this new character, Elsie King, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Thank you so much, Brian. I've really enjoyed it.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time. We used to walk down